You're listening to Small and Mighty Conversations, a podcast celebrating and supporting the small business owner and creative entrepreneur. With your host, me, Sam Burgess. You're listening to Season 4, Episode 7. Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Small and Mighty Conversations. I am editing today's episode on the hottest day of the year and it is sweltering. So excuse me for not having a long old intro today because I'm boiling and I really just want to get this all wrapped up and go and stick myself in the freezer because I am in Hampton just outside of London and it is about 36 degrees today. And to be honest, after I've sat in the freezer, I think I might go and sit in the sun and then back into the freezer. Anyways, on with today's episode. Today I am chatting with the fabulous Rosie Davis Smith, who is the founder of LFA and PR Dispatch, as well as a contributing editor over on In The Co, my business blog on smallandmighty.co. If you haven't checked it out, go and check it out. There is loads of articles, well over 100 articles now on all different aspects of running your business, with several on PR, which is what we're talking about today. Rosie is a PR expert, and she's here to share her top tips around how you could be doing your PR, why you should be doing your PR, and how you can actually get your PR done in as little as 2 hours a week. So without further ado, on with today's show. Hi, Rosie. Welcome to Small and Mighty Conversations.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I am very excited to have you because you are one of the Small and Mighty Co, one of our experts, and you contribute blog posts and lots of amazing knowledge on PR to my fabulous audience. And I would love for you to introduce yourself to the Small and Mighty listeners, because as listeners know, these experts episodes are a bit more focused on a topic, but I think it's really important that people understand a bit behind the expert. And I know you've got quite an interesting business journey, and therefore I would really like for you to introduce yourself and share a bit about you and how you started your businesses, plural, and what you do today.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Sam, as well. I'm really excited. My name's Rosie Davis Smith. I have two very different PR businesses. I guess I started about 10 years ago when you finish your degree and you don't know kind of what you're going to do. I did textiles at university and did textile design MA. So I always thought I was going to be a designer, but to be honest, I just wasn't a very good designer.
Okay. It's good for you. At least you admitted to that and accepted it's not for me.
I can admit that. I think as a textile designer, you need to be super, super talented to sort of be able to survive in that world. And, you know, I was passionate, but I wasn't actually that very good. I wasn't actually that good. So I did lots of internships to kind of figure out what I wanted to do, as kind of you do when you've come from a creative degree. Mm-hmm. And I started an internship with an independent brand called Lowy. Mm-hmm. That's Lowie, the knitwear brand, not the bag brand.
Yeah.
And she said to me, what would you like to do? And I said, well, I'd really like to run a business one day. I always knew I wanted to start a business. I said, but I'm not quite sure what in, so throw everything at me. And she said, okay, I'm going to get you doing some PR. I had no idea. I'm going to be completely honest. I had absolutely no idea what PR was at the time.
Okay, sure. Absolutely. Whatever that is.
But yeah, I'll have a go. So she put a pile of magazines in front of me and said, I want you to call up all of these magazines and our knitwear to them. And I said, okay, I can do that. So yeah, that was my kind of first experience of PR. So I was calling Elle and Red and Vogue, and I'm from the Wirral originally, near Liverpool. I had a very thick Scouse accent at this point, and kind of very Scouse, like, hi, yeah, I'm calling from Lowy, can I pitch some knit? But it seemed to work, and she started to get some call-ins, and a few weeks later I started to see some coverage, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. I didn't even know that magazines, like those pages of magazines, were free to be in.
Yeah.
And so after the internship, I said to her, you know, I feel like I'm doing an all right job and no one else is doing this in the company. So can I stay one day a week and would you pay me to do it one day a week? And she said, yeah. So that was my first client. That was about 9 years ago now. And they are still a client of our agency today.
Oh, amazing.
Zoe lives on. And I still have a great relationship with the founder, Bronwyn. So yeah, so I thought, wow, this PR thing's amazing. And I approached it from a slightly, well, at the time I didn't know, but a slightly different way. I was very honest about the process. And I really kind of felt like it was actually quite easy to do if kind of you knew what you were doing, which I'd kind of picked up along the way. So other brands through Loewy started asked me to do the same for them. So one day a week or a few hours a week doing their PR. And eventually it turned into me having a lot of clients and thinking I should start an agency, me not knowing what a PR agency is, but thinking I should start an agency in this. So many, many years ago now, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I started the London Fashion Agency, which today it's called LFA, and today it stands for Lifestyle and Fashion. But yeah, and obviously with a name like that, we got lots of inquiries because we ranked really high on Google. People thought we were much bigger than we were at the time. It was just me and I think a part-time member of staff. But the London Fashion Agency, everyone was like, wow. And I thought, well, it's just me. And yeah, and so LFA grew over the last 6 or 7 years into what it is today, which is an agency that deals with lifestyle, beauty, fashion, homeware, kids, gin. We've even got a gin brand. And we do PR on behalf of brands. PR being we get them in magazines or we pitch them to magazines. We do events. We work with influencers. We basically increase their awareness however we think's best for their kind of brand or their strategy. And then 3 years ago, I started to, we were getting approached by lots of brands, but they just didn't have the budget.
Yeah, because PR can be quite expensive.
It can be expensive. We've always been completely transparent with our pricing. And our prices start from $1,500 a month. And you have to do it for a minimum of 6 months. And we're always really honest with people. People say, God, that's really expensive. And I know as a business owner, that's expensive. But if you're going to do it with an agency, it is a big investment and you need to invest for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's not a one hit wonder. It's not like I'll just buy it for a month. And
yeah. And I think that's why people have such negative connotations around PR, because a lot of the time maybe agencies aren't as honest with them about like what they can expect over the period of time. And people feel a bit frustrated, but I think it's really important to be honest from the start and make sure brands have that budget. But I kept seeing these amazing brands that like amazing product businesses that just didn't have that budget but would still do really, really well. And I knew like the stylist would like to hear from them, or I don't know, the Telegraph would like to hear from them. And I started to have this little seed in my head. What if we put everything we know into a login, into a membership, and people subscribe, brands subscribe, and they do it themselves. So just like I did at the very beginning with no real experience and no contacts, but a great product and getting results. What if we did the same, but for smaller businesses or businesses that maybe didn't want to outsource? And after much planning and kind of trialing it, this then was PR Dispatch. So 2 years ago, I launched PR Dispatch, which is a membership platform. Which helps businesses for £59 a month to pitch their product to press. So we give them everything they need. So they have all the press contacts that they need. They have our support. We have a great Facebook community where they can ask any question, big or small, about anything. It can be about anything about brand, but it's mostly about PR. We'll try and help you as much as we can. There's a learning section. So step by step, how to email the press, templates, resources. So yeah, and it's £59 a month, and we've got over 100 members now, all doing their own PR and actually doing a really, really good job. So yeah, that was my second business, PR Dispatch, and today both of them run side by side alongside each other.
Which do you spend more of your time in?
Great question. To be honest, it's very equal. And 1 month it could be very LFA heavy, but 1 month it could be very PR Dispatch heavy. I mean, I'm quite lucky in the times of year that are really busy for PR Dispatch. So busy times for PR Dispatch are July, because we launch our Christmas gift guides, and January, because there's something about when small business owners come back from Christmas and they're raring to go. So we do a lot of like prep work in December, and then a lot of like New Year, new PR in January. But actually those times of the year for LFA are very, very quiet. And September is mad for LFA. So it just depends on the
because of the Christmas rush, Christmas gift guides, etc.
And it seems that everyone wants events in September and October. So I try and be really, really equal. But it depends which business needs me. I do have a team for both businesses. So I try and they're great. They could do this business with their eyes closed. They don't need me here anymore.
I bet they do.
I think I just keep the cake flowing. but yeah, I try and give them equal attention as much as possible. But that's a very good question. I like that question.
I just kind of wondered, because obviously one's younger than the other. Yeah. So sometimes the younger business, I can imagine the younger business probably has needed more of your time investment. While kind of getting it off the ground, but now you're kind of what, in your third year with PR Dispatch, so it's sort of started to get into its groove, I guess, so now you can split your time equally.
That's true. Yeah
New businesses always need all your attention. It's like having a newborn.
It has been a newborn for the last 3 years, and it still is. It's like I feel like only now we've really not nailed it, because you never nail it, but we're finally got to that stage where we're like, it's working and it's in the right format. I've changed the format 4 times. Because it didn't work for members, so you rehash everything and do it all again. And this is now the 4th version of PR Dispatch, but this is, as far as I'm concerned, what the members are saying, this is the right version. So hopefully now I can take my foot off the gas and maybe go on holiday. I don't know.
What kind of things did you change?
Oh, everything. So when we first started, it actually just started with Christmas gift guide lists, because everyone wants to know who is doing Christmas gift guides in every single publication. So it actually just started with this. And when it started, it was just an Excel document that we used to send around every 2 weeks to the people that had paid for it. And this is not a scalable business. I can't be sending an Excel document around every 2 weeks and updating it like this. It's ridiculous. These people need contacts real time. So then... we made it into an email format. So every month, everyone would receive contacts to their inbox, but they'd only receive 3 contacts every month. And obviously, again, it's not enough. Like, people need more to get their teeth into. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like an email, like we went through a whole like brainstorming process, and an email feels very disposable. An email is disposable.
Easily deleted by accident as well.
Easily deleted by accident, easily lost. But like the press hop around like nobody's business. So what I tell you last
they
week
do.
Is not relevant this week. So I thought, right, we need to move to like a login, and we're on the same thing that you're on. So we're on Thinkific.
Yeah.
And it's great. So yeah, all the members have a huge like members area. They've got their contacts, they're updated real time. They can download Excel sheets. So it's all very updated real time. And now they get 20 contacts at first instead of 3. So yeah, it's people say, listen to your customer. My God, listen to your customer. They do know what they want, and they know what helps them. So we do have lots of feedback sessions, and tell us what you want. And it really helps grow the business.
I think it's so important to listen to what your customers want, and so many businesses don't. And people get into that kind of mindset of, no, this is how I want my business to look, this is what I envisage, and this is the direction I'm going in, regardless if their customers are saying, no, actually, we'd prefer something different. You do have to be really flexible. Absolutely. That sometimes what you've envisaged is not actually going to be your end business product goal.
Whatever. Yeah, and the format that they want things, like the ease for them, like what is, like, some of the things are difficult for us to do. Like we have this thing called real-time press requests, where if, I don't know, Country Living are looking for patterned cushions, we post it in the Facebook group, and then everyone logs in. And one of our most loyal members, Patsy from Moxham, the other day said, would you guys mind emailing us when this comes in? And obviously for us, that's it's not a pain, but it's a lot of work to go into making sure that automation is flowing right, and that everyone's getting the right emails, and the people that it's not relevant to don't get it. But it's going to help them at the end of the day. So I'm just like, that's just... get on with it and get it done.
Let's make it work.
Even if it's a pain, make it work.
But that's just it. You are there to serve your customers, and it's the same for every business, whether you're service or retail. You know, your customer, if you don't have customers, you don't have a business. So you do have to kind of do what they ask sometimes.
Exactly.
Even if you're like,
even if you don't want to.
exactly. I was going to ask you about PR Dispatch. So I understand why you started it, and kind of you've given them the tools to be able to do it themselves. What made you decide to kind of give them the tools to do it themselves and not just create cheaper packages within LFA that maybe they'd be able to buy into?
Because I this is going to sound really cheesy, and lots of people ask me this and they're like, really? Because there's something about doing it yourself and getting results. And I just believe before anyone outsources PR, they should understand the process and have seen the results that they can get from it, and know the process that goes behind it. Like, it's, you know, if you're going to pay an agency, a grand and a half minimum for us a month, you're going to very quickly become frustrated when the coverage isn't there by month two. But if you'd done it yourself, you'd understand that, well, that takes time and the press don't know you, and there's magazine lead time. So, like, you could be waiting 4 months for something to be published. The other reason is that the brands that we work with at LFA, it's very hard to run, and I've learned this, it's very hard to run one business and have two very, very different price points. And when I first started PR Dispatch, it was actually called Fashion PR Resources. Oh, that's awful of that, isn't it? It was actually called that at the beginning. When I first started PR Dispatch, I actually kept it under the LFA umbrella. And what it was doing, putting the bigger brands off. So
was it?
The bigger brands want to feel like they're part of like an agency that deals with big brands, and it's very hard.
Yeah,
I've got something written down later. It's very hard to be all things to all people. So in the end, I made the decision to completely separate the two. They're two very different companies. They have different employees. They're different limited companies, and it was the best thing I ever did. And I am still part of both of them, and maybe taking a step away as being the face of LFA. I'm more the face of PR Dispatch because I love our members, and I think the members need me and the team there. But LFA is more of kind of, it's an agency now, so it doesn't need me as much. So yeah, I think I made the decision to just separate them to keep both businesses going.
I completely understand that, having worked in-house in a marketing department, I know the scrutiny we would put agencies under as to who you're working with, like what are the brands. Oh, you went with that brand. Oh, yeah. It is a bit like a club.
When they see the other brands, they're like, oh yeah. So it was the best thing to separate the two, and I'm so glad I did, even though it's two tax returns and two VAT returns and everything, just a bit of a pain. But you know what? Totally worth it.
So let's talk a little bit about PR and small businesses. Now, I feel like PR falls to the bottom of a lot of people's lists, and I have put my hands up. I'm very guilty of putting PR to the bottom of my list. I don't outsource. I do a lot of my own outreach, and I go through fits and bursts.
Don't worry.
Spend a lot of time on journo request on Twitter, hashtag journo request, which is where I've got a lot of my gigs from, like speaking on Channel 5 News, being on the BBC, things like that. That has just come from Twitter, and it is really just fits and bursts where I'm just happen to be like, oh, have a little journo request. Oh yeah, I'm free this evening to go on Channel 5 News.
There you go. Cool. That's how it works.
And it's not, it's exactly how it works. And it isn't like that for everybody. So before anybody's listening thinking, I'm going to get Twitter open and I'll be on the news tonight. That doesn't happen very often, and it is just the universe aligning, and I happen to see that tweet, respond to that tweet, and you know, it happened to all work beautifully. But I do also go through loads of journal requests that are of absolutely no relevance to me. So this is a very long-winded way of asking a question,
I like this.
But why do you think PR falls to the bottom of so many small businesses' lists of things to do? And I know it's because we have very long lists, but we all seem to prioritise so many other things over PR. And PR does actually come under marketing, which a lot of people don't really, they see it as two completely separate things and are very quick to be like, marketing. Okay, so I need a blog, and I need a podcast, and I need to be on Instagram, and I need to do adverts on Facebook. But PR doesn't seem to feature. Why?
I've got two reasons. Number one, I think lots of people are quite scared of it. I think confidence, and this is something we really try and work with all our members, all our PR Dispatch members, confidence, confidence, confidence. You know what you're doing. Don't feel scared of the press. They're absolutely fine. They want to hear from you. So I think maybe the unknown or not really understanding it and the confidence around it is one thing. The other thing, and this is why it's the bottom of everyone's to-do list, the results are not instant. So you can post on Instagram and it's visible, it's instant, and you can see it, and the people are responding to it and commenting to it. You can email the press and you probably won't hear back unless it's something they want at that exact moment. It's a long process, and for most people, mm-hmm. including myself, it can be a little bit disheartening when you've got a million other things to do and you're ploughing your way through press and you don't hear anything back. And like, I've seen it firsthand for many, many years now. The second you really like start doing it every single week, you do start to see results. If your product's kind of ready mm-hmm. and your branding's great, you really do start to see results. But I think just that initial not hearing anything back makes people feel a bit disheartened.
And I totally agree. I mean, the press aren't scary.
No, they're great. Love them. Obviously.
they're really not scary, but we seem to have this, I don't know why we think they're scary. Even I kind of found that one. Only having dealt with journalists before in-house, I don't know why when suddenly it was pitching my own business, I was like, terrified, which was really unnecessary for me to feel like that. And I have found personally that once you've done that outreach and you've actually got some press coverage, those journalists do actually remember you, and then they come back to you when they have something, because it's kind of, they've got deadlines, and if they're thinking, oh yeah, I remember I spoke to so-and-so and they've got that product, and oh yeah, that would work perfectly, they will reach out to you, and half the work is done for you because you haven't got to do the outreach. But you've got to build the relationships first.
PR, it's all relationship. It is all relationship building, and it's just putting that initial kind of work in at the start to get those relationships up and going, and then you're so right, they do come to you.
Well, that's what I found personally. So now I don't have to do that much outreach because people come to me, which is great, which is what you want. But I had to do, I'm in my third year of business. I had to do a lot at the beginning. So it is an overnight, and it is frustrating when you reach out to lots of journos and you never hear back. But then you have to remember lots of people are doing the same thing. It's nothing personal.
And I think there's a really interesting thing around what you just said about when you were at the agency, you were fine to do it. But when it came to your own business, it was much more daunting. And I think, do you know what, even I feel like I could not, we get a lot of PR for the agency, and I'm lucky enough to do a lot of podcasts and interviews, but I could not reach out to people. I'd cringe. I'd no. But it's so much easier when it's coming from someone else. So a big piece of advice that I try and give to lots of our members is, I know as a business owner how difficult it is to email the press and say, look how great my product is, or look what I could speak about, or I can do this, or I can do that. So when I first started, I had an alter ego, if you like. So I had another email address from an assistant that was also me, but it just made it a little bit easier because it didn't seem like it was coming from me. It was coming from I think the studio assistant. And the other thing that I see lots of people do, which I really like, is virtual assistants. So especially with PR dispatch, because it's really easy. You just literally follow the steps and copy and paste and work your way through. But just getting someone else to do that outreach, even if it's just 2 hours a week, I think can massively, massively help, because it is difficult. You put it off because it's coming from you as well. So, yeah, really interesting point there.
I like that. And I think what's good as well is because obviously you guys have already got templates, but pre-writing that kind of blurb about your business and having that you just reuse over and over and over again, and that it's, you haven't got to kind of cringe and write it from the heart type thing. And is email the best way to reach out to them?
For product businesses, so if we're talking about kind of product pages, definitely email. Reason being is because if you can get hold of them on the phone, which honestly, we're doing Christmas gift guides at the moment, we must make about 100 calls a day, and that's no exaggeration. We honestly, 100 calls a day trying to get through to someone that knows who's doing the Christmas gift guide, that can get their details and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so if you do get through to someone, they will say, can you send me an email? There's nothing more powerful than a visual on an email. So we say to people, embed an image of your product in the email so they can see what you're talking about.
Rather than an attachment, actually stick it in the copy.
Yeah, I think especially if it's like a feature like Stylist in Stylist magazine, they like printed, patterned, colorful, so choose something from your collection maybe that reflects that, and then embed that, and then you could attach a line sheet or you could attach a lookbook, and always link to your website so they can very quickly click through. Because the press are great, but you're helping them to do a job, so the easier you can make it from them, the better.
That is a big part of it. And it's the same for so many different industries. You know, if you want something from them, make it as easy as possible for them to pick you.
Yeah. 100%.
Don't make them work. Yeah, don't make them work for it.
Don't make them work for it. And like things like if you're going to go for like more interview based press or like just having things like headshots. You've got loads of this stuff, Sam. I've seen your stuff. It's really, really good. So like loads of really nice headshots and loads of shots in your workspace and all that sort of stuff is like really, really great for the press to use. So if you're going to go for other types of press that isn't just product focused, make sure you've got loads of nice juicy assets for them to use. And you've just got your chances increased by 100 if you've got them.
Absolutely. And I what I do with all my headshots, I have my bio and all my headshots saved in a Google Drive, which I've then got a Bitly link for. And then I just send that Bitly link. So it's got my bio, it's got my headshots, it's got landscape photos, it's got portrait photos, it's got print ready, it's got web, it's got lifestyle, and then it's got just more kind of professional ones. And then I just let them choose whichever one they think is best for the reflection
their magazine.
For their magazine. So I just give them all the options, and that works an absolute treat because it's an instant reply. I have it saved as a draft email as well, so I can just copy and paste it saying, absolutely, please find attached, blah, 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 blah. Here's the link. Bish, bash, bosh. They're always like, oh, that was so helpful and so quick. And I'm just like, it's not my first rodeo. But it is, it's that you being responsive and being concise and making their job easier, that means they're more likely to want to work with you again than, oh God, yeah, we did try to use them and then they sent us the wrong photos and, oh no, 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 we won't work with that brand again. We'll pick a different brand this time. You know, you want to make it as easy as possible, especially if you're doing speaking events as well. You need to have headshots for speaking events and a bio.
Exactly. And putting all that stuff in a Google Drive is so, so good. So good for profile. I'm actually going to go away and do that. We're a PR agency. We haven't got it that organized. I'm actually going to go away and do that today. And if one thing I'll say is if you've had a product shot requested, flip that on its head and only send them what they request.
Yes.
Because if you send them a link to your whole kind of Google Drive of images for your products, they just won't go through. So flip that on its head if it's a product page and just send them exactly what they've asked for.
That's
saved with the price, even better.
That is a very, very valid point. Like I've had that before. And it's the same like if you're working with influencers and things and you're sending them any brand imagery for them to put in a blog post and things. I know from experience, don't send them everything, because even if you say, please only use images 1 to 5, but there's like 500 images, they may actually look at all of them and then choose different ones that you didn't actually want them to use. So I've had that from experience. It's like, where did you get that image from? Oh, I found it in the folder. Yeah, but you were only allowed to use his images 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. It was like, lesson to myself, don't give them other images.
You heard it here first. Don't give them anything you don't want them to use.
No, because they will trust me. It's like logos as well. And that's, I guess that's also important as well, having like high-res logos and things that they can use. It's not just product images. With the press, do they prefer lifestyle-y images or stock-style images or mixture?
Mostly, I'd say 80% stock, so like white cutout images. Mm-hmm. Obviously high-res, 20% lifestyle images. The more independent magazines may use one of your lifestyle shots, mm-hmm. or maybe online if it's more interview based. Mm-hmm. But if you're going for like the traditional product like placement features, it will always be high res cutout images. And one thing we encourage all our members to do is if they are not a professional photographer, mm-hmm. is to get their cutout imagery done professionally. Because I do think, especially if it's jewelry, I see lots of jewelry brands.
Yes.
Yeah, they need to get them done professionally. So please, 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 please invest in your cutout imagery.
Jewelry is extremely difficult to photograph. So absolutely, really, really, really important that you outsource that. And to somebody who knows how to photograph jewelry as well, not just anybody, because having worked in-house, in marketing, in a jewelry business, trying to photograph jewelry myself, never. It's very difficult.
It's a real skill.
Yeah, all the reflection and all that jazz. Yeah, really difficult. So before anybody starts any PR or even signs up to PR Dispatch, would you recommend that they invest, first of all, getting photos?
I do recommend they invest having cutout shots ready. We do have people that sign up to PR Dispatch, and you get 20 contacts every 3 months, and mm-hmm. lots of brands sign up pre-launch, let their contacts build up, And then so when they're ready to launch, they have got more contacts to contact, if you like. But one thing I really do recommend is before you reach out to anyone is have your cutout imagery, because if the Guardian come back and say, yeah, we'd love to call in a cutout shot and you haven't got it, you've blown that opportunity with them and they might not come back to you again.
So definitely something, if you're going to start actually doing outreach, you really should have the photos ready to send.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes
yes.
complete sense. Otherwise, although you might not get featured for a while, you don't really want to kind of, it's not a kind of part of your business where you test the water to see if any, you know, if there's any nibbles before you then invest in something else. Unfortunately, need to invest first and then hopefully you will get the nibbles. And because you spent that money, I would like to think it will give you the kick up the bum to do more PR outreach because you've just spent all this money on photos.
Hopefully. I hope so.
In theory. How many hours a week or month do you generally recommend people spend on outreach?
Oh, I love this question as well. These are all the things that I talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. So we have something called the 2-hour PR week, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a worksheet that we give to all our members. And we say in the first week, so when kind of you start your PR, it's 3 to 4 hours, and that is putting everything. So like you just said, maybe doing a Google Drive of kind of assets that you'd send to kind of interview space, naming all your images, mm-hmm. With your brand name, the product name and the price, maybe putting together a line sheet if you don't have one. This is a line sheet for press, not a line sheet for wholesale. Very, very different. You'd never send wholesale prices or product codes to the press.
They don't need it either.
Don't need it, and they should never have your your wholesale prices because they will publish them. Please don't send them that. 2 to 3 hours in week one, just getting your assets together. And then we say 2 hours a week after that. And we say try to reach out to 5 press a week. And then the next week you probably follow up with the 5 that you contacted and then reach out to another 5 and so on and so on. And we kind of try and get our brands into that habit, just setting aside those 2 hours every single week to do this outreach. I'm going to be completely honest, the brands that do the best are the brands that maybe have an assistant or someone freelance to just make sure those 2 hours. And when I say freelance, it does not need to be. Lots of people say, oh, I'm looking for a freelance PR person. And I say, oh, God, you do not need a PR person.
No.
You just need someone that is organized and can write an email. Mm-hmm. You need a virtual assistant. You just need someone that literally just stay on top of it for you because we give you everything else. Mm-hmm. Or it's self-explanatory. So you don't need someone with contacts already. You just need someone to stay on top of it. So, yeah, if you're thinking about maybe investing in PR later this year, I would recommend maybe trying to get someone to do it for you 2 hours a week just to make sure that you are on top of it if you don't think you can stay on top of it yourself.
And I think it's a really worthy investment because, you know, if you look at the flip side of, right, actually, I don't want to do this myself and I'm going to outsource my PR entirely, it's considerably more expensive than it's going to be to have a membership and to pay a VA for a couple of hours a week.
Yeah, absolutely huge. I mean, we're one of the most affordable agencies in the UK. And, you know, I'll be completely honest, Cecilia, who is our head of communications at LFA, having a chat before, and she said, you know, you pay for quality when it comes to paying an agency, and you totally do. And there are people that will do it for cheap, but I just think, please don't try and scrape some money together to pay an agency. Unless you really feel that the fit's there and you know they're going to do a great job for you.
That, I think, kind of goes with any type of outsourcing. Like,
yeah.
You really do get what you pay for. I'm a big believer in the pay peanuts, get monkeys. So that's how...
Oh, love that one.
If you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. So I'm exactly the same. People who want to outsource social media or any aspect of their marketing, they're like, but if I outsource it to this company, they'll do all my social media for like, you know, £50 a month. And I'm like, will they? Really?
Yeah, but it won't be speaking to your customer.
No, they won't. And but they can also guarantee that I'm going to get X amount of followers. I'm like, why birth? Like,
Well, that's the thing. And like, we do get people that come to us and say, well, this agency have said that we'll get this amount of coverage. And I said, well, that agency, I wouldn't trust them because, to be honest, no one can guarantee coverage. It's completely. You could take a brand to press and they do incredibly well. You could take a brand to press and they, no one picks them up. Mm-hmm. And that goes on years of experience and gut feeling about how we feel about brands and whether we think we can do a good job for them based on their product and their offering.
Absolutely.
Now, any agency that's saying, I can promise you 5 pieces of coverage a month, the quality of that coverage will be awful. And it just, no one can guarantee that. And anyone who says that, wide berth. I don't agree with that at all.
No, and that's just it. You know, you can't guarantee results. I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
No, go on. Love that. Go on.
Generally, though, what kind of hit rate should you expect if you're diligent with your outreach and you've got the photos? And what kind of success rate should you be looking at in terms of how much are you going to have to put out to actually get a bit of coverage?
Okay, so I've got a brand, mm-hmm. who I'm going to use an example
because
I think if everyone could go and have a look at this brand as well, I think it would really help people to understand. So it's a brand called Five Dot mm-hmm. Botanicals. Mm-hmm. They are a PR dispatch member. Mm-hmm. Zafran, who's the founder, has been with, well, she's followed my workshops for years. She's part of Enterprise Nation. She's followed me around for years and always said, we're going to start this beauty brand. Anyway, they launched a few weeks ago. They've been a PR dispatch member since maybe just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And my God, she has put so much effort into that branding, the tone of voice, the customer, the website, everything is beautiful. And she started her outreach a few weeks ago and she's already had some dream call-ins from the press. And I think she's had like 3 or 4. She's done a few hours. The point is, the better your brand is, the better your product offering mm-hmm. is, and your imagery is, the better you're going to do. So she's had 3 or 4 call-ins. She's been doing it a few weeks. I mean, that is exceptional for a new brand. Mm-hmm. I think if everyone goes and looks at her, it's Five Dot Botanicals. Mm-hmm. That's a great example of a brand that's done really well with PR.
And do you think that comes down to the fact, not only her diligence to the PR that she's doing, but the fact that she has got a beautiful website and nailed her brand, and it's that identity piece that it looks worthy of coverage?
Yeah, I think it's 90% in the branding and the visuals and the story. And it's called Five Dot Botanicals because each piece only has 5 ingredients in.
Love it.
And it's beautiful. It's beautifully done. They've worked so hard on it. And you know what? Brands like that, another one is Stuart Gardner, mm-hmm. who does. He's a member of ours. He does incredibly well. He makes tea towels with like what wine pairing to pair with meat. And again, it's just that sort of product that fits really, really well with the press. And if you've got that sort of product, you should be getting 3 or 4 pieces of coverage a month once you've started that ball rolling. Especially if like we do Christmas gift guides, as I said, especially if you've got a really Christmas gift guide worthy product. Like you should be in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 Christmas gift guides if you've put the effort in.
Love that. Now let's talk about results from the press coverage.
Oh, yeah.
So once upon a time, the days before social media, you would get featured in a magazine like Elle or Vogue, and there used to be a phone number next to the product, and people would ring up, and that was the only way people really bought stuff. And people, I remember when I did my podcast with Donna Ida right back in season 1, 2, maybe 1, can't remember. And she was talking about, obviously, when she launched her brand, it was the days before social media. Can we even remember those days? And she said, you know, you'd get in a magazine and it would sell out. Her phone would be ringing off the hook with people. But now, she, as much as she still likes to be in magazines, and it's kind of like almost like proof of being a good brand, she doesn't see the sales that she used to. So why should people do PR in terms of the magazine route?
Because, okay, so... Everyone, so I love this, and this is what I talk about all the time. Again, it's like we've spent loads of time together, so that's great. This. The first thing is that PR now is all about awareness. It's all about awareness. The second thing is trust, especially as influencers. People are trusting mm-hmm. an influencer a little bit less these days. Mm-hmm.
Because everybody and their mum and their dog is an influencer. That's the problem.
Exactly. And there's so much noise that people are reverting back. And when I talk about press, I don't just talk about I don't just talk about print. I talk about online, mm-hmm. like The Guardian online, for example, mm-hmm. or The Telegraph online. So trust is the next thing. The next thing is, I call it a purchase discovery. So if you are going to buy a new foundation, mm-hmm. I'm going to go for beauty, why not?
Yeah.
You will probably Google top 8 foundations, or maybe yeah. maybe you want, I don't know, a vegan foundation, something along these lines. You'll Google it, and up will come an article by The Independent or by The Evening Standard.
Yep.
Probably.
This actually happened to me the other day. I was looking for a new tinted moisturiser as an alternative to Laura Mercier, and I searched top tinted moisturisers with SPF, and there was an article from The Independent and one from The Evening Standard, and I worked my way down the list, and then I looked to see how relevant it was, like how old was the article, and then went off searching more. So
there you go. So there you go. So that purchase discovery is huge for brands, and that actually, in those sorts of articles, that does translate to sales. Like, we had something in The Guardian mm-hmm. Recently, and it drove 1,500 pounds worth of sales for the brand just from that channel.
Wow.
So that sort of press does lead to sales, but you're completely right. Something in print doesn't drive the same sort of sales that it used to, but it is now all about the awareness, because mm-hmm. what someone will do is they'll see you in The Guardian or on a Sunday or The Observer magazine. They will follow you on Instagram, mm-hmm. and I do this all the time, are they turned on or turned off? Mm-hmm. Do they feel like your Instagram reflects what they saw in The Guardian and it's a beautiful curated story of your brand, or are they not on board? And that from then, it's then your task to turn them into a purchasing customer. So get them to, and this is stuff that you all cover, but get them to your website, get mm-hmm. them on your mailing list, market to them. And then they might see you again a few weeks later in the stylist, and you've re-triggered that thought. Mm-hmm. And that's what the part that press plays now in like a modern strategy. And, you know, we work with brands that are stocked in John Lewis, and the first thing that John Lewis will say is, what press have you had? Where's your press? So it's so important for stockists as well to see that you've got that loyal press following. So you're completely right. It is not about all sales anymore. I almost think it's more important than it used to be 10 years ago, because customers are loyal and they're brand loyal, and they want to see you in a number of places before they purchase from you. But once they make that first purchase, they're with you for life. So
it's also a case of, they say that you need to see a brand or marketing message 7 times before you'd actually retain that information. So I know, and we've probably all seen this ourselves, where there's been a new brand that's popped on the scene, and you can tell they have spent so much money on their marketing budget, where suddenly they're an Instagram advert, then you see them in the paper, and then they're like a cover wrap around a magazine, and then you see them in another paper, and then you see them on Instagram, then you see them on Facebook, and then you see them on a bus, and you're just like, this brand is everywhere. But you'll recall it, and then suddenly you're really interested. And I'm not saying you need to spend that kind of money on your marketing at all. No. Don't wrap London buses, they're really expensive. But it is, you know, that is various ways that brands get your attention for you to recall. If you only saw it once, you would forget about it. If that bus went past and you hadn't already seen that brand, that logo, that image, you know, several times before, you wouldn't have even noticed.
And that's the thing. And you, do you know what, a lot of what you've just mentioned is paid. Like, it's wrapping a bus, it's advertising on Instagram, it's paying an influencer. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? The beauty of press is that it is endorsement, and it is free. And there is it's so selective on what they do feature. And if you do get that coverage, that space, you know, my God, there's no higher endorsement for a brand than being featured by the press.
And to clarify, being featured doesn't mean an advert in the back of a glossy.
No. If anyone emails you about advertorial, please say no. Please say no. Spend the budget somewhere else. Go and get some imagery taken. An advertorial is not press, and you can't use it as press. You can't say featured by Tatler because you paid to be in an advertorial. And I see a lot of brands making that mistake.
Me too.
Because you just don't know. You don't know any better. And they word it, they are really clever. They word it I'm going to be hated by the British press now. But they word it really cleverly, like, oh, you could be in our editorial, but it's going to cost you this amount of money. And it is really exciting for a brand, but please say no.
Yeah, I see it all the time. I see brands which say, featured in Vogue. And I'm like, no, that was definitely an editorial. Yeah. I can tell now that that wasn't, like, you know, on the first few pages as a must have. You paid for a little advert in the back. And that's not the same. And it doesn't have the same endorsement. You want to be really proud. You know, you want to be able to, you know, have actually been featured and actually be able to sing about it. But you're not going to want to take a photo of the back of Elle magazine, if your tiny little advert, and then share that on social saying, look, we're featured on Elle. Not the same thing, and customers are wise to it. And also, look at the other brands that are also paying for those adverts, and think about whether or not those brands would be in the magazine for free. 9 times out of 10, they would not be featured.
Exactly. And I've got a good example. We have a member who does kids, she does kids notepads. Mm-hmm. She's, and I remember the first time I met her, she was like, oh God, I've just paid for two different advertorials in the back of the brand and in the back of the magazine. I was like, try and get out of it. And, you know, since she's been with PR Dispatch, since she's been with us 3 months, she's had six pieces of coverage. I mean, this is unheard of, and she's doing incredibly well. Her product's amazing. But she put the money into and the time into the PR and got the coverage, even though at the start she was like, oh, but I've paid for this. So you can turn it around, and it is possible.
I'm so glad we brought that topic up, because it is one of my biggest bugbears, is when I see it on websites like featured in, and I'm like, So going back to Christmas gift guides, if you want to be in a Christmas gift guide and you're thinking, right, I'm excited now. Rosie's got me super, super, super excited about PR. I'm going to do it. I'm going to join PR Dispatch right now. Are they too late to be in the Christmas gift guides?
No, not at all. We launched Christmas gift guide membership last week.
Yeah.
The members that have signed up have just started reaching out to Long Lead. So that is your monthly magazines. There's a few closing in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So what are we now, like July? Mm-hmm. By the end of July, most of them will still be open. Mm-hmm. By the end of August, most Long Lead will probably be shut for suggestions, but then you've still got all your short lead papers. So you've got all your weeklies, and then you've got endless opportunities with online. And I do mean endless. The Evening Standard did a Christmas gift guide a day for 2 months last year. It's quite amazing. The beauty of Christmas gift guides is that are endless opportunities. If you are thinking about doing Christmas gift card with PR Dispatch, we only have 100 memberships. Mm-hmm. Reason being, I just think it's unfair to have thousands of people pitching to the press.
Yes.
So we limited it to 100. We've already sold over 25%.
Okay.
So they are selling quickly. So if you want one, two reasons, jump on it quickly, because we're going to run out of memberships, I reckon, by the end of August, if not early September. And what's the other reason? Oh, yeah, the sooner you get in there, the more chance that you have.
Especially for those sort of really on the ball journalists who want to kind of get this all wrapped up with a bow, ready, done.
No journalist wants to put together the Christmas gift guide. It's always the person who gets the short straw. they want to get it done as quickly as possible. And we give you, obviously, the same, all the email templates and kind of everything you need to do it. We've got some workshops on it, kind of all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Christmas. Exciting. There will be a link in the show notes for anybody who wants to go and sign up. And I think it's a really good start, especially because it's a lot of, there's a lot of different press out there wanting things for gift guides. This is your opportunity to get lots of press coverage in one go as well. And secondly, it's an opportunity to sort of really throw yourself into it. And hopefully you'll get those results, which will then spur you on for next year to keep that momentum going, which is...
Exactly. And lots of people do that. They see like a good pickup at Christmas, but actually January, February, the press remember them and they come back to them again. Or
for Valentine's gift guides, Mother's Day.
Exactly. Or they're just doing a roundup of, I don't know, seasonal notepads and you fit in. So yeah, it's a really good, so many press. It's great. I love the Christmas gift guide. It's my favourite thing.
Awesome. And what about influencers? Do you help with influencers through PR Dispatch?
Not through PR Dispatch, through LFA we do. But my My feelings on influencers change daily.
Same.
I obviously, as an agency, our clients work with influencers a lot. Now it's taken years of our experience, their experience, hard work to really maybe pin down a selection that we work really well with on behalf of our clients, mm-hmm. that we think are really authentic, that really get us as an agency, that get our clients. It's been, I think people underestimate how much work goes into working with influencers, mm-hmm. and the relationships that you need before them. The reason we don't do it for PR Dispatch is because I think it's a really personal thing, mm-hmm. and it should be a relationship, especially of a small business size, that a relationship that the brand builds directly with the influencer.
It's not, and you can't do templates and stuff for stuff like that.
We can do.
Okay.
Haven't got that far yet, but the fact that you said it makes me think I've got some hard work to do. We could do email templates and kind of like formats for reaching out to people, paid and unpaid. I mean, we do it all through the agency anyway, mm-hmm. so it probably is going to have to come at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to do a workshop later this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe looking at my calendar, where are we? July, maybe October or November, on do's and don'ts of working with influencers, yep. and paid. We do a lot of actually unpaid and paid stuff. So mm-hmm. If you're going to ever pay someone, what to think about, how to go about it.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, we are going to do a workshop later this year, and then maybe early next year we'll launch a little sub-membership of influencers.
That sounds exciting. I think that's really fab. And I think, you know, my opinions on influencers change on a daily basis, but I think having something trusted like you guys to kind of point people in the right direction, because I get asked all the time about influencers. It's probably one of the most top questions I get asked on my power hours, is people say, right, this is a list of influencers that I'm thinking of working with, or this is a list of influencers that have reached out to me, should I work with them?
It's an open-ended question.
A little bit, yeah. And then I look through the influencers, and I would say 9 times out of 10 I'm like, no, definitely not, absolutely not. And then I'm like, why? You know, it's so many people don't realize what they need to look at. And I think that would be really good to have kind of a place where they know what they need to look at, i.e. not just how many followers and engagement they've got. There's so much more that you need to know. And also, when you find one that you like, that you think would be great, how to reach out to them, because they get loads of approaches. So
yeah, okay, noted.
Yes,
noted. In on the to-do list.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
You're welcome. It's because you haven't got enough to do, Rosie.
No, this is good. See, you've got to listen to people. We said at the beginning, listen to people.
Well, I get asked all the time, so it'd be great if I could just direct them. I'll just send them to you guys. After PR Dispatch. Final question for you. I'm going to ask you two final questions. So as an entrepreneur yourself, what is your biggest piece of advice for anybody, whatever their business, whether their product, service, thinking of starting a business, got an idea in their head, what's your biggest piece of advice from the learnings you've had?
I've said this since day one. It's being all things to all people is a recipe for mediocrity.
Oh, I love that.
I actually stole it from Richard Branson. I can't take credit for it. I read it somewhere about eight or 9 years ago. And honestly, it's literally everything I do every single day, it's stuck by me. So trying to be, and I said it before, I have to separate the two businesses, because you try and be things, try and be all things to all people, and you fail. So yeah, just do something, do it well, speak to your audience, don't try and be everything to everyone.
Love that. I go with a good kind of jack of all trades, master of none, which is kind of the same thing, really.
But yeah.
It's very true. You've got to niche, you've got to know what you're doing. I love that. I think that's fantastic. And final question, whose story would you like to hear on Small and Mighty Conversations?
She's gonna laugh if she hears this. She knows I love her. Her name is Sharmadine Reed. She was the founder of Wow Nails.
Yeah.
And now she's just started an app called Beauty Stack.
Oh,
she is. I've done a few workshops with her, I've met her a few times. I just think she's bloody amazing. And yeah, I'd love to hear her story on a podcast. So Sharmadine Reed, please, would be great.
I would love to have her on the show. I actually, before she started Wild Nails, or Wild Nails was in its infancy, met her when I worked in recruitment, and she came to me as a candidate.
Did she? Yeah. There you go.
And she said that she was starting a nails business, or had just started it, and little did we know that that would turn into Wild Nails one day. And I couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh my goodness, I met her. Okay. So yes, that would be fantastic. I'd love to have her on the show. Maybe you could connect us. That
give
would be
her a little nudge. Yeah, not a problem.
That would be fab. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Rosie. I'm going to add links to everything in the show notes, social media, where people can sign up, links to some of your blog posts, because some of the things we've talked about today, Rosie dives into in a bit more detail over on In The Co, the blog on Small and Mighty, so that you can read a bit more about it. But thank you so much for being a fab guest and sharing your knowledge.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, Sam.
You're welcome. I do hope that you enjoyed that episode with Rosie and you've got lots of exciting ideas about where you're going to pitch your business to. And I really do urge you to go and sign up for PR Dispatch. It is an amazing, awesome community. And, you know, I don't really need to say much more about it, because I really feel that both Rosie and I really kind of talked about the importance of PR and how valuable this is, considering how expensive it can be to actually outsource your PR. There is a discount code if you want to sign up to a full membership of PR Dispatch. If you use Sam 2019, so 2019, and the link is in the show notes. And also there is a code for the Christmas gift guides as well, which is Small and Mighty 50 to get some money off the gift guide. So do go check out those links in the show notes. There's also links to Rosie's social media, PR Dispatch, LFA, etc. And don't forget to share where you're listening to the show. Take a screenshot or send us a photo as to what you're looking at or where you are when you are listening to your podcast, and share it on social, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and don't forget to tag me on Facebook. And on Facebook I'm Small and Mighty Co, and on Instagram and Twitter I'm Sam Burgess UK, and don't forget to use the hashtag Small and Mighty Business as well. Until next week, keep pushing forward. Your next great success is just around the corner. Oh, and keep cool.